Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Caroline.
And I'm Anna.
And this is Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously.
And if you've just joined us because you heard Anna Namina's lovely recommendation on the Call Your Girlfriend podcast, an extra special welcome to you.
Yes, hello. We've got lots of American people listening to the show, which is really, really lovely. So thanks so much for joining us. And yeah, thanks so much to Anna Namina, who we love with all our hearts.
One of the people who's got in touch since last week is another Anne.
Not Anne Friedman.
Not Anne Friedman, different Anne, who, among other things, asked us whether we could recommend any other podcasts that are made by and feature women. Because if you've gone looking for that kind of thing, you will know that there aren't that many.
You've got a list, haven't you, Caroline, of good lady podcasts?
I do. It's a hobby of mine. I collect them. In fact, I did this last week on the newsletter I run, and the link's in my Twitter bio if anyone's interested. But I thought we'd shout out to a few. Particular shout out to the Berlinials podcast of Sarah, Marissa and Sarah, who got in touch with us to tell us all about how they record in Berlin, where they make some dinner, they get some wine, they put the microphones up and off they go.
Yeah, which sounds ideal. I really think there should be more wine involved in our work-based podcast.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, just to set the scene for you slightly, just so you know how we do it, it's currently 8 a.m. in the morning. We're sitting in a basement that smells slightly of sewage.
We're
sharing a bottle of Diet Coke and I'm really tired
and sweating. Yeah, so yours sounds like a lot more idyllic, Sarah, Marissa and Sarah.
So definitely check that out. Other podcasts made by women that I really like: The Illusionist by Helen Zaltzman. That's all about language and speech and sort of how words get used on the internet.
It's really interesting, isn't it? And it's really good for like seeming like you're smart at a dinner party.
Totally. And she also is really good at having totally fascinating guests on. Like, my favourite episode she's done so far is the one where she interviewed the woman who invented Jenga.
Oh my god, I haven't heard that one. That sounds brilliant.
Yeah, this woman's amazing. She invented Jenga and also loads of other like cool word-based games like Ex Libris and a whole load of other stuff.
Awesome.
Which is very good. And another one I really like is Criminal, which is, I suppose, part of this post-serial podcast movement of true crime stuff. I believe they're from North Dakota or North Carolina. Basically somewhere that you don't often hear from in Britain. You know, you most of your podcasts will be LA or New York based, like most media things. And it's a true crime thing, but they do lots of kind of historical stuff as well as modern day stuff. There's a particularly good episode where they investigate why people are stealing Venus flytraps.
Oh, wow. That's a real thing.
Yeah, from a national park or something where they grow naturally.
Was it a profit-based crime?
Yeah, people steal them to sell.
Like, wow.
Because, you know, they're a kind of curiosity that people want to have as a houseplant.
Yeah.
And I guess they're really hard to, like, breed in captivity or something.
That's so funny.
The presenter, Phoebe Judge, goes out with one of the, like, rangers who protects the Venus flytraps.
Oh.
It's really cool. Anyway, so yeah, those are a couple of really great shows. There are plenty more. We do our best to point to them whenever we can.
Yeah, feel free to point us to them also. You're always so good at getting in touch with little recommendations and things. Another lady podcaster we've got coming onto the show next week is our dear friend Elizabeth Minkle.
Yeah, so she does the Fansplaining podcast with her co-host Flourish, and we're having a bit of a kind of podcasty exchange with them. So Elizabeth's coming on Seriously next week, and we're also going to be on their next episode of Fansplaining.
So watch out for that. We're also working on some other specials, so you should be excited. We've got our Christmas special coming up and something else for you between Christmas and New Year.
It's very exciting.
It's really exciting.
We're not going to say what it is yet because we want to try and, you know, do tension and stuff. Yeah. But let's just say that I had a lot of people in my living room yesterday afternoon and some stuff happened.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
And that sounded a lot worse than I meant. I didn't mean that. Okay, everyone came round. I made food. It was really nice.
And there was wine and it was lovely. But it does mean that we're podcasting like crazy this week. So on to this one.
Yes, onwards.
So the first thing we're going to talk about this week is Victor Frankenstein, the blockbuster movie of the story. Frankenstein.
Is it a blockbuster though?
Well, it's kind of blockbustery in style, isn't it?
Yeah, they clearly want it to
be. I don't think
it
will actually bust any blocks.
That's a good point. I'm going to email Helen and ask her how the word blockbuster came to be.
Oh, we should.
Anyway, yeah, so Victor Frankenstein, starring James McAvoy and Daniel Radcliffe, and based pretty loosely on the book by Mary Shelley.
I need a refresher of the book. I think I read it in school, but I don't really remember what goes on. But I seem to know instinctively that the film was not sticking to the original story.
Definitely not. I read it maybe three or four years ago when Danny Boyle's Frankenstein play was at the National Theatre, the one with Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller.
And they swapped roles, didn't they?
So they took it in turns each night. One of them played Frankenstein, one of them played the monster, and they kept swapping around.
Would have been a very small role, the role of Frankenstein's monster in this version of the film.
Well, it doesn't really exist, does it?
Yeah.
So the premise of this take on the story is that McAvoy plays Victor Frankenstein, in that sense, a not particularly changed character from the original, a medical student with ideas about creating life from death. Mm-hmm.
Igor, you and I shall be at the very heart of a scientific enterprise that will change the world.
We shall create a life out of death.
It's alive.
Do you realise how significant this is?
Oh, I have an inkling.
Although in London, not in... I think it's in Switzerland, the original story, but I can't remember. The total departure then comes in Daniel Radcliffe's character, who starts out as a kind of hunchback clown type person at a local circus, and then is sort of rescued by McAvoy. You know, his deformity turns out to be not permanent.
The most action-y moment of draining a cyst ever seen on on screen.
And he just has to wear a back brace for a while to train his muscles to stand
basically,
upright.
Basically, James McAvoy quote-unquote fixes him by just shoving a draining injection-y thing into his cyst and then shoving him against the wall a few times.
Yeah,
and then he has no other problems with his back for the entire rest of the film.
Yeah, and actually I thought, because to start with, he's still walking really badly, as you would.
For 5 minutes.
But then the next scene, he's dressed in a nice suit, walking down the roads totally straight. And you're no. Months also, of physiotherapy.
Yeah, I know. Also, Frankenstein doesn't ask his permission. He might be quite happy the way he is, but he's no, I'll fix you. That's what you need. Fixing.
Yeah.
You're broken. Let's fix you.
So after he's done that, Daniel Radcliffe becomes his sort of roommate and assistant, because he's also an avid student of anatomy and a sort of amateur physician.
Mm. And happily adopts the name Igor. And he's like, I used to have a servant called Igor. You're now Igor. And he's like, okay, won't question that. Cool.
Yeah, so he becomes Igor, and together they vivify a lot of internal organs.
Yeah. I mean, Daniel Radcliffe sort of goes straight in with the face of childlike wonder at being able to have books and stuff, because basically the backstory of the character is that while he was in the circus, he was the circus doctor, and Frankenstein discovers him because he sees him doing an operation without any equipment, and so when he gets proper academic books and the chance to actually practice all this stuff he's sort of learned out of, you know, fear and shame in the corner of the circus, he's really, really excited. And I will say, a positive point about this film is that Daniel Radcliffe is excellent at acting, enthusiasm and, gullibility as well. He's really good at that sort of, naivety, which is probably why he was picked for that, young Harry Potter role. But he's still really good at it. You believe it when he's, all excited by the books.
And he's definitely still got that face that Harry used to do when someone did some magic.
I know.
And that was really pleasing.
His best face in the whole film, by the way, side point. There's a moment where Igor gets some and then he walks home the next day. And
that's great.
A real smug, yeah, boned last night.
Weirdest walk of shame.
Yeah, it was walk of victory.
Walk of victory, though. Yeah.
Walk of triumph. That was great.
But yeah, actually, that's a good point to mention. So Igor's lady friend is Lady Sybil from Downton Abbey.
Yeah, Jessica Brown Finley.
The other principal character is Moriarty from Sherlock.
Yes. Amazing. And also, Mycroft is in it for a second.
Yes.
Just
doesn't have any lines.
He must have had a cut part,
yeah, because in the final edit he has no lines and then he dies.
Yeah, you don't bring Mycroft in just to stand there in a moustache, do you?
Well, there is a possibility. I just would say there is a possibility that Mark Gatiss really wanted to be in the film.
Yeah, maybe.
So they just let him.
I think I'd been watching the film for an hour and a half and the monster still hadn't been made and I was like, this is going to be a really long film if they still haven't.
Yeah, but that all happens quite quickly, doesn't
yeah.
it? So the first sort of monster that they make is like a kind of hybrid chimpanzee awful thing that they bring to life on the table of the sort of exhibition room in the Royal College of Surgeons.
Yeah, for me this was the only scary part in the film, which is that, yeah, they made a sort of rotting monkey. And also that's when we are introduced to Freddie Fox, who I have to absolutely shout out to, because I am, as people who listen to the podcast regularly might know, a huge fan of Lewis and other daytime murder mysteries on ITV. And Freddie Fox appeared in an episode of Lewis that I absolutely adored, which was set in a student paper, and I was working on the student paper, and obviously Lewis is set in Oxford and I went to Oxford. I loved that, and Freddie Fox was some kid reading Shakespeare and doing murders in his spare time. Then we started seeing Freddie Fox pop up everywhere and we'd always be oh my god, it's Evil Sam from Lewis. And he's actually making quite a career out of being an evil posh boy.
Yeah, so that's exactly what he is in this. He's the kind of evil posh boy who funds Frankenstein's wacky research with electricity.
Yeah. And so that's basically the plot. And then, but there's a lot more infighting between people and attempted murders.
Because by this point, Frankenstein is an outlaw. So Moriarty, he's not actually Moriarty. I can't remember what his name is.
He's the police.
Yeah, so he's the police officer who's very moral and he's very sort of Victorian, and he believes that it's against God and nature to, bring dead things back to life.
And he's also grieving. Everyone's grieving.
Everyone's grieving in this film. His wife died. But also, I have to say, I know we were supposed to be no, Frankenstein, you go. I was no. No, don't do this.
No, I don't think. Frankenstein. Go, you go, you go, Frankenstein.
I don't know. I think I just got the sense we were supposed to feel caught up in his enthusiasm.
I think you privilege whatever Dan Rad wants in this film.
Yeah,
your eyes and ears and your moral compass is Igor.
Yeah,
who abandons the project because he's it's gone too far. We created a weird monkey. Can't you see that? And then abandons the project, but can tell that Frankenstein is doing all this shit because he can't cope with the loss of his. There's basically they introduce a backstory about the fact that his brother died when he was young, and this is, he's I killed my brother, now I must create life to which I thought was unconvincing.
Very unconvincing.
I would have loved it. It's basically, there's a scene where Daniel Radcliffe is this is why, right? Your brother, I have his pocket watch. This is why. And he's no, that's not why. And he's oh, really? What is it then? And in that moment, I would have loved it if he'd been I'm really jealous of my brother because now he's dead. He's super famous. So I need to be super famous. And that, I would have bought that more because he seems obsessed with the idea about people knowing his name.
Yeah.
And in that very sort of circle jerky, let's say the main character's name a lot in this film and then everything will seem more legendary and amazing. That sort of Frankenstein, eh? Frankenstein, go and see the movie Frankenstein.
Yeah, it is a bit like that. Also, the way it ends is quite like that as well.
In the book, okay, excuse my ignorance. In the book, does Frank... spoiler alert. If you're going to go see this film, I can't say I hugely encourage you to, but if you're going to, stop listening for 3 seconds. Does it end the book with Frankenstein just escaping into the Scottish Highlands forever?
No, it doesn't.
Because that's so weird. He's just there with his pack, tranquil.
I can't remember exactly, but part of the sort of innovative genius of the novel Frankenstein is that it's all told kind of indirectly. It's all told through like a letter from a man leading a polar expedition who meets the monster at the North Pole and then writes this letter back to someone, and you are reading his letter. Mm. So it's always, the whole point about it is you're always at like one remove from the thing you want, which is a metaphor. So no, it doesn't work like that at all.
We should actually talk about what we thought about it instead of just like picking at holes in the plot.
Well, I thought it was really silly.
Yeah, it was. And it was a bit like, so they open very consciously with like, you know this story.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe this is something they picked up from the book, from what you've just said, but then they like take ages and ages and ages to get to the bit of the story that you know. And they like keep delaying it. And then like when it actually happens, it's quite brief and fairly anticlimactic. I mean, there's a lot of explosions and a lot of death and stuff, and it's very actiony, but it's not, it isn't the story that you know, I guess, intentionally.
No, but actually I thought the bits when it was at its best were the bits when it was furthest away from the original story.
Yeah.
So like the bits at the circus.
Yeah, I enjoyed the circus.
And the policeman character and stuff that just isn't in the book at all. It was when it was trying to do familiar plot points that it sort of didn't measure up.
Mm.
And another point in which it was quite good was when it played with your knowledge of the plot points and of the kind of the afterlife of the Mary Shelley novel. So like the bit when they're first sketching out the design for the like big scary man they're going to make on the floor.
Mm.
And Daniel Radcliffe's character says to James McAvoy's character, is like, why is his head flat? His head doesn't need to be flat.
Yeah, he's like, and Frankenstein's like, because
I like flat heads, okay? And obviously that's a reference to the subsequent like Hammer horror Frankenstein's where he always has this like crew cut and a flat head for no reason.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing I did really like. But I don't know, I just did not feel in peril enough.
Yeah, it's not very scary, is it?
It's not very scary. It's quite ridiculous.
I thought it had some like very traceable influences.
Mm.
So the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock films
so much
were a big influence.
But they're better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the way
funny.
It's cut and stuff. Yeah, there wasn't much humour in this actually. The style of the shots and stuff. I also thought it was an incredibly like televisual film.
Mm.
So this might in part be because of the casting, but I was reminded of Sherlock quite a lot. For example, they do a lot of like overlaying of like anatomical drawings and architectural drawings onto like what you're looking at for like brief seconds.
Mm.
So you get like fig one underneath like some sort of brain and like some drawings on it and things like that. Or like when they go to Freddy Fox's castle, there's like flashes of like the architecture of what they're doing for the project come on top, because they like try and turn the castle into a big like electrical conductor. Also, have you ever seen Ripper Street? With Matthew McFadden?
No, I haven't.
Which is like very like this in so many ways.
Really?
Again, like this very steampunky aesthetic, lots of like shots of like knives flying through the air, like going slow-mo and then like really, really fast. Again, that's quite like the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock's and stuff. And yeah, the sort of CGI old London, but with like, yeah, weird speeds of shots. And basically they do a couple of times, they're like, and what's your name, sir? And instead of him saying Frankenstein, he like, James McAvoy does like a little sneaky smile. And then like the camera like speeds up massively into his face. And there's all this other stuff comes in like, and it says Victor Frankenstein in big letters. And then that whole shot like reverses. And that's exactly the kind of thing they do in like Ripper Street. And like the titles are very like dynamic. And basically all the dynamism of it I thought was very televisual. The person I went to see it with also said that it was reminded of them of all the like early noughties steampunky films like Van Helsing and like,
very much so.
Yeah.
Actually that's what I was trying, Van Helsing was the one I was trying to think of.
Mm.
Is that is the one with like Sean Connery in it, right?
I haven't seen it, I don't know.
Yeah, there's one, it's The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, right.
Exactly the same fake London, fake 19th century London, where there are certain supernatural elements that are just part of everyday life. That's the modification.
I thought in this film they could have done more interesting things with like death. I feel like, I know obviously I'm going to make this comparison because of Dan Rad, but I feel like Harry Potter deals with like what you want from death, or like why you want to avoid death and like what you'd actually not gain from that, much better than this film did, because all they did like was sort of say like, my wife died, my brother died, so I'm struggling with that. There was no real like actually death kind of needs to happen. There was just the like one guy being like, but when we both die we'll be in heaven together, and someone else being like, well, I don't believe in God, so
yeah you're right. I also feel like further to that, Charles Dance, who plays Frankenstein's father, his part must have been massively cut down as
he
well.
He kind of comes in, smacks his son around the face and then leaves.
He's only in one scene, and I feel like if he'd been in it more you could have built up that idea of like parental grief and sort of fraternal grief. And yeah, that could have been far more interesting.
But it was also very cliche in that it was like, why couldn't you be more like your brother, the dead one?
Yeah.
And then like that was it. You just got that for like a split second.
Yeah.
So I think could have been done better, but I also would have to say props to them for like veering away from the original story quite a lot, because those were the best bits.
And exactly. So in fact, if there'd been more of that, it would be a better film.
And I love you, Dan Rad.
Yeah,
we love Dan Radcliffe.
He is really good. As is James McAvoy's pretty good as well.
He does feel a bit like he's come from another film, though, doesn't he?
Yes.
He's so over the top crazy in it that you can. It was almost like Shakespearean theatrical. Like you could imagine, he seems slightly out of place.
Yeah. I think it's probably a good film to go and see if, like me, you're kind of struggling with December and finding it cold and difficult and your brain just doesn't seem to be working as well as it normally does.
Also, maybe if you're going on a date and you want to be funny and then afterwards you can be like, lol, this film was like so weird in these ways.
It would be a really good date film because there are lots of things to talk about.
Yeah, you could pick it apart afterwards in quite an amusing way. But it wasn't all bad. And try it out.
For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
So next we're going to talk about Parks and Rec, and I kind of want to just be like, do 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 do, do 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 do. That's my way of introducing that. But I won't, but I did.
Yeah, so Parks and Recreation, the American sitcom that stars Amy Poehler, and I don't know, I feel like, I mean, it's finished now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It finished quite recently.
I think so.
But it ran for 5-6 years.
Yeah, it was 7 seasons, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's, I don't want to use the word cult following because I feel like that's too mainstream,
isn't it?
But it definitely has the vibe of something that people like to think it's a cult thing, even though it is now mainstream.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah.
I'm sure we're not introducing anyone to Parks and Rec. Put it that way.
If you don't know, it's set, or at least initially, it's set in the Parks and Recreation Department of a small town.
Yeah, it's called Pawnee. I assume it's the fictional town of Pawnee
because
of all the jokes they make about Pawnee constantly.
It's a kind of like civil service department where they're responsible for like parks
and leisure
and stuff like that. It's something that I'd been told repeatedly over the course of years that I would really like.
Yeah, same.
Because I am a massive fan of 30 Rock and The American Office and all things that the creators have explicitly said influenced and informed what they did with Parks and Rec.
I also think it's part of people being a bit like, you like funny ladies.
Yeah, there is that, which slightly
like,
knocks me,
well,
actually.
Like, yeah, I just like funny people.
I like funny people.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I had sort of resisted watching it for ages because of that reason. Then, thanks to some rather vociferous recommendations from podcast listeners who said that we just should get over it and watch it, I gave it a go. I'd also heard that the first series was not great and then it sort of gets better. And I do agree with that. Having now watched the first series and most of the second, I think they made some modifications after the first series as well.
You've watched more than me then, because I've watched the first series and like maybe 3 episodes of the second one. And I agree that I'm already finding the second series much more like fun. And also I'm just much more like into the storylines.
Yeah, it does loosen up a bit, doesn't
it?
Because the first few episodes of the first series kind of stressed me out because it's quite uptight and the comedy is not easy.
It's quite farcical in the first series, and although that element obviously remains because the jokes most of the time are like that the Parks and Rec department aren't doing brilliantly, there's just a lot more like side plots and like you're right, it loosens up. I think also the supporting cast are so great, and actually they're not, although they're in a lot of scenes, they're not actually doing very much in the first season, and actually like already I've had a lot more of like Aziz Ansari in the second series. And,
yes.
Like, that's great because he's really funny.
He's really funny. Yeah, and you're right. The supporting cast is great. I don't know his name, but the guy who plays Ron Swanson.
Yeah, I don't know his name either. We should know his name.
He's excellent as well.
Lots of research.
And of course, Amy Poehler is really good.
Yeah, and her character is actually a lot more interesting than I thought, because I was just like, oh, it's Amy Poehler playing like that sort of, I thought it was going to be head bitch in charge kind of character. Mm. And actually, obviously, the best thing about the character is that she's very sweet and like very naive and like struggling quite a lot. And like, she's very relatable in that way.
Yeah, and very, very well-meaning and wants the best for everyone. But...
Yeah, and just like sits there like eating whipped cream and like pouring, I don't know, just all those like childlike elements of her, she's just like pouring sugar into an already really, really sugary drink. Like, oh, I really like you. You're so adorable.
There's some secret ingredient in these Nutri-Yum bars that make me feel so good.
Sugar. It's a block of sugar.
Yeah, she's adorable. Leslie Knope, her character's name is. So I think actually what the part that I didn't like was the kind of politics element of it. The fact that they do work for a political administration, and obviously that is an important part of the show. That, I don't know, that just didn't really work for me.
Yeah, it bored you.
Kind of bored me and kind of kept getting in, like every time something interesting was happening, they'd go and like, do a scene where they were having a public meeting and it's like, oh, bored of this.
Yeah, fair. I mean, I also think, some of the best plot lines are the ones that aren't set in government. So like, Anne, the nurse, obviously, who's played by Rashida Jones, is like one of the characters who you really want to keep getting back on back to her storyline and her whole like, you know, their boyfriend, on-off boyfriend, Andy, played by Chris Pratt. And Mark exits the series, I hear.
Oh, does he?
Which I would be excited for, because, like, he's the worst. There are moments where I do, like, really, really laugh. But I probably agree with you that they're not always, like, the political ones. Like, I quite enjoyed the episode where she goes, her mum, like, sets her up on a date with this, like, really old guy, and she doesn't even realise it's a date, and then she brings him to the rock concert. And, like, that made me laugh a lot. All of Aziz Ansari's lines make me laugh a lot. He's a lot more of a, like, laugh-out-loud character than in Master of None. And his, like, complete silliness really gets me going. I really liked the one where he, like, was caught by Louis C.K. playing a policeman, breaking into his own van.
Yeah.
And, like, just generally doing, like, weird shit. And there were, like, cameras and, like, sweets in there. And, like... When the policeman was like, what is going on here? It's like, what? Is it a crime parking while Indian? And he's like, there's no Indian parking stereotype involved here. Which is really good. I also love Chris Pratt as Andy. I really love it. Basically he plays Anne's sort of like layabout boyfriend who's like just off. Just like awful.
Yeah,
just like can't
awful.
Do anything.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he again is another character who like can't seem to like function properly, but it's like really well meaning. And I just something about him, although he's like selfish and awful in lots of ways, I just really, really adore him and like find him really funny. So there's a scene at this rock concert where he knows that she's gonna try and break up with him, but he doesn't know why. And he just knows that she's really mad and he's like, I'm just not going to leave this bar.
Yeah.
Like every time she comes over, he like tries to make an excuse about how he's like, oh yeah, sorry, I've just got to like unpack this equipment. Or like, oh yeah, I was just introducing the band to like, oh, we're just having a debrief. And like, he's really good at that, like guilty, like, anyway, I love him. I think he's really, really great in it.
Yeah, you feel like if he put half the effort he puts into avoiding stuff into actually doing stuff, he would be a really functional human.
I know. And then he, like, becomes really fit and gets a main role in Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
So, you know, works out for Andy.
While I was on holiday last month, I listened to the audiobook of Amy Poehler's Yes, Please.
Oh, is it good?
I would definitely recommend the audiobook as opposed to the book, because the book is a bit variable.
Mm.
It definitely has the vibe of something that... Her agent was like, so a publisher's offered you loads of money to write a book. Could you, you know, do that in between bringing up your children and working full time? And she was like, okay. So a lot of the book is about how hard it is to write a book in the middle of the night when you've got a full-time job and two children. But the audiobook has got lots of like Patrick Stewart's on it, and like she's just got loads of like guest performers helping her do it. So
that's really fun.
It's more enjoyable, I think, than it would be to read it just in a book. There's a whole section about Parks and Recreation and about particularly about the kind of community of the people who worked on it.
Oh, that sounds fun.
And that, I think, disposed me really well towards the show even before I'd watched very much of it, is just hearing her talk about partly about the kind of the friends she made doing it and and how kind of collegiate they all were, but also stuff about the process and how they came to it, how they actually, apparently they originally, they wanted it to be more like the British Office.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
It's just like The Office US, where the first season like falls flat because they try and do the really sardonic, really like grim humour. And I feel like the warmth is lost. Like the Office UK works because you love the characters so much, even when they're being like truly awful, you're still like, there's some humanity there, which I don't think the Americans managed to do as well.
Yeah, and actually the Parks and Rec, like the American Office, gets better when it stops trying to do that.
And just goes and plays a bit and is more silly.
But there's some quite interesting stuff in the book about like the kind of single camera format that they chose to use and the kind of meta docudrama element to it.
It's definitely shot in that style, isn't it?
So that was quite interesting, and that definitely made me appreciate it a bit more, because I do feel like I don't love it. Like, it's okay, but I don't love it.
It's not clicking with you. I think not, I might commit to it, and then it might click with me, and I might really enjoy it. Because, like, The Office US, I probably watched, like, 2 seasons before I actually cared, because my boyfriend loved it so much, and I was like, I'll watch it with you. And now I, like, love it, and I will, like, rewatch any episode, and it will bring me, like, deep joy.
Yeah, actually, I guess I'm finding this to be a bit of a downside of doing this podcast. There aren't many, I would say. Like, most of them are 100% upside.
There's not time.
But there's just not time for that anymore.
To commit to
There's not time
thing.
To commit to something that I'm not clicking with, because there's, like, I'm
And
already...
why should you? Why should you have to, like, get through? It's like, you shouldn't have to go through months of a bad relationship to make it good with a person, so why do it with a
TV
show?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm already on to, like, whatever we're doing next week. I don't... My watching time is... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll probably stick with it a bit longer. And I am enjoying all the subplots and stuff. But yeah, I think good for you, Caroline, for even when everyone's like, Caroline, you'll love this, for being like, you know what? There are other things I like more.
Yeah, this is the problem, is that I have to say, every time I watch one, I was like, I could be rewatching an episode of 30 Rock right now.
Fair, fair.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm really excited for this one. Last week, I recommended Caroline the BBC Four series called Detectorists, starring Toby Jones and Mackenzie Crook as two metal detectorists in the English countryside looking for treasure. Caroline, thoughts?
I think this is the best thing I've watched this year.
Oh, I'm so pleased.
Possibly, like, in the last 5 years. It is.
I think it's the best thing. Is it still on? I was going to say on TV at the moment, but I guess
it's finished. It's just finished, I think. Season 2 has just finished. In the way of British television, there were only 6 episodes in a series, and there have now been 6, and that is it. I really, really hope they're going to make more. There is so much more mileage in the characters and the storyline. But even if they don't, it just exists as like a shining example of what good television can be.
Yeah, it's just so wonderful. I'm a bit behind compared to you. I've watched all of the first series. You've watched none of the first series, right? And then you've watched all of the second series, whereas I've only watched the first half. So don't spoil me because I'm really invested.
Okay. but let's just say for people who haven't been watching it, BBC Four, incidentally, for Americans and those unfamiliar.
Yeah, if people don't know what BBC Four
is. It is a little bit odd that something like this is on BBC Four, because BBC Four is like the highbrow channel where they have documentaries about
polar bears,
steam trains, and sometimes really weird themed weekends where they just show you like a fixed camera on the front of a canal boat for 2 days.
Yeah, I'm so excited about this. Christmas time this year, they're doing like a sleigh ride. So they film like 7 hours of a sleigh ride,
and then they just scream
and they just like set it to nice, you know, the sound of like the snow crunching, and there's like maybe some bells, and like you can just sit and have it on in the background for 7 hours while you do a jigsaw puzzle. Like that's the old person vibe of BBC Four,
yeah,
basically.
And they do the occasional, wasn't Kate's documentary on BBC Four?
Yeah, our colleague Kate Mossman,
she makes documentaries about rock and pop music, and her documentaries are on that channel, and it's like a strange catch-all thing for, as you say, for like slightly highbrow weirdos.
Yeah,
basically.
And like all things like Only Connect, the like smart people quizzes.
I hate
often
that quiz, by the way. I hate it. Anyway,
I really like it. Come from BBC Four because they're like, oh, you're intelligent watchers. Basically, you know, the BBC is like inform, educate, entertain or whatever. Yeah,
this is the educated
bit.
So anyway, into that context is
Detectorists, which is so weird.
A sort of like lovely, gentle sitcom about some nice people who like to go metal detecting in the countryside.
Anything? Fuck all.
Did I ever tell you about the beautiful old battle axe I once found?
Yeah, you married her.
Have I done that one for you before?
Sorry to interrupt, but are you metal detectors?
This is a metal detector. We are metal detectorists.
You're going to discover the Valley of the Kings.
In Essex.
It is, I didn't realise this, it's written and directed by Mackenzie Crook.
It doesn't surprise me at all.
It's so perfect.
It's very much his vibe.
Yeah.
Mackenzie Crook, American people might know him from The Office UK, in which he was Gareth.
Or from the Pirates of the Caribbean films,
yeah, of course,
where he's the pirate
with the eye.
Also, from me having once seen him in the pub in my village.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, that was so exciting.
Mackenzie Crook, of Caroline's local pub fame.
Yes, he was on like a motorcycling weekend with some of his friends.
I bet he does that. And I bet he detectors.
Yeah, I bet that's why he's written it, surely. Yeah. He must be into it. So yeah, he and his friend, he plays the character of Andy, Toby Jones plays Lance. They are best mates who are in their little village. They're in the kind of metal detecting little society with some other people who also like doing metal detecting.
Yeah, it's sort of set in Essex somewhere, isn't
it? Yeah, they each have a kind of area of land that they go out on and look. And they're just long, long shots of lovely countryside with really relaxing guitar music.
Yeah, shout out to Johnny Flynn. Mm. So the score, all those sort of folky bits are Johnny Flynn's music, which I was really into when I was like 15. Like real resurfacing of Sussex born Johnny Flynn.
So you get some lovely shots of the countryside. It just looks so peaceful, them walking around with their detectors. There's this kind of slightly more metaphysical element to it about how, you know, they're always looking for something and they never find it.
Yeah.
But they're kind of okay with that. And
they're not really doing it. You get the feeling they're not doing it to actually find it. But there's like an extra bit of tension. I mean, there's not really tension in this, but if the little that there is because we know that there actually is treasure.
Yes. So we've seen
somewhere,
like,
because
a kind
in the
of
title,
prequel,
sequence,
title sequence,
yeah, in the title sequence, they show you like some like golden spoon buried under the ground, and they're always really near it when they're searching, but they never quite get anywhere near it. The humour really comes out of the fact that like they both know that it's a bit geeky what they're doing. Like Andy's wife kind of rolls her eyes at it, but obviously doesn't really mind. All the people in the club are a little bit idiosyncratic and odd, but they're all very lovable, aren't they?
They're very lovable, and they're very sort of loving with each other as well. That's the other thing that I really like.
Quite supportive.
Very supportive. Also, it's so brilliantly written. It always, every sort of little bit of dialogue, you get two or three laughs, and then you think, okay, the end of the scene is coming, and then you get basically, it carries on for two more exchanges, both of which are absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
And in a less good thing, you wouldn't get those last two exchanges, but you just every scene he pushes it to its absolute potential. It's brilliant.
And there's lots that everything's quite subtly linked back, isn't it? So it's one of those things where the joke comes in because, like, three lines into the dialogue down, they're referencing something like four lines earlier. Like it's very sort of self-referential.
So, like, one of my absolute favourite bits, and this is not a spoiler, although it is in the last episode, is where Andy comes to see his wife's a teacher, and she's, I think it's a Saturday, and she's like working at the school fete, and the school fete is all Victorian, so all of the teachers are like dressed up. So she's dressed up as like a kind of Victorian flower seller, and obviously he's not dressed up, and he's come to like tell her something urgently. So he's standing outside the school, and he rings her on his phone being like, can you come out, I need to talk to you. First she's like, oh, just come in, and then he goes, I can't, I'm in modern day dress, everyone would stare at me. And just that is so funny. Like, that says so much about his character. It's like, he doesn't want to ruin anything for anybody. But also he doesn't want to be humiliated. And so I just laughed for hours about that.
Yeah, it's really exactly. It's just really gets like me giggling. It's just so my humor. And yeah, a lot of the laughs as well come from like, so we've got Andy and Lance, who are like two best friends who spend an inordinate amount of time together. And other people think it's all a bit odd and a bit strange. And they also, like, both find the other one quite odd and strange. And they're always, like, kind of pulling at, like, the weirdness of each other. So Andy will tease Lance for, like, being too involved with his ex-wife, or having a stupid car, or whatever it is that day, or a messy house. Lance will pick at Andy for his, like, general geekiness.
Yeah, and on top of that, I think I found the kind of... This is going to sound a bit po-faced, but the kind of general inclusivity of it really pleased me, in the sense that, you know, Andy's a stay-at-home dad. Although you might think that metal detecting is just a middle-aged white guy hobby, actually their club is got plenty of women and non-white people and all kinds of people in it, which is just really nice. They don't make an issue of it, but it's just there.
Yeah, that is nice. Also, all the dilemmas are quite... They're never that high stakes. Like, it's like, oh, a new young woman has joined the club. Yeah. It's just so cute and adorable. Toby Jones and Mackenzie Crook perform brilliantly. And I can't remember the actress's name, Rachel something, who plays Andy's wife. And she stars alongside Toby Jones in the new series Capital, so I feel like we should definitely watch that. Marks out of 10 overall?
20.
Everyone go and watch it if you can find it somewhere. Yay, Detectorists. Loads of Detectorists love. I love everything about this show. Please go and watch it.
Definitely. So for next week, I'm going to recommend Anna something that is... just like Detectorists. It's not like Detectorists.
It's the opposite end of the scale.
Adventure Time. It's a cartoon, but, you know, it's one of those cartoons that's for grown-ups.
I've seen, like, I knew people at uni who had, like, Adventure Time posters and stuff.
My flatmate and I went through a phase last year where we were obsessed with it, where we watched it, like, every day. As a result, I have, like, an Adventure Time tote bag and various other things that he bought for me. We've kind of stopped now, but it's one of those things where I'm not even going to try and describe it, because otherwise we'd be here for an hour and we have to go and do some work now. Because... if it even has a plot, it's really complicated. It's kind of mythological. A lot of the humour is to do with the voices and rather than the actual dialogue. I think you're going to have to give it a go and see what you think.
Okay, I'll swap the lush, gentle green fields of Detectorists for the lurid fluorescence of Adventure Time.
Exactly.
Thanks for listening to Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
We have a special request of our listeners. We are turning our thoughts to Christmas, and we want to do a special episode all about Christmas television, how you watch it, what you enjoy, and so on. So we would like to hear from you. All our contact details can be found on newstatesman.com/SRSLY. Please get in touch.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.